Hi, my name is April Cantor. I am 45 years old. Today is December 28th, 2018, and I'm speaking with Flora Cantor, who is my mom. And we are recording this interview in Indian Trail, North Carolina. So, Mom, can you tell me a little bit about your childhood? Like, what were you like as a child?
I think I was shy as a child, but being the oldest of the children, there's seven of us from Daddy, oldest of the girls, not the oldest of the, all of us, Johnny is the oldest, and then I'm next to him, so I'm oldest of the girls, and there are four of us girls. Sort of bossed everyone.
You were bossy.
I was a little bossy, but I was shy when it came to friends. I didn't really have a whole lot of friends except my classmates in school. Probably had two or three really close friends in school.
Like elementary school?
In elementary school, like Zenaida, Josephine, and Fairly at that time.
Do you have a memory of you doing things with your childhood friends?
Playing in the plaza across from the church, St. Peter's Church. St. Peter's Academy is our school, and then right next to it is the church, and then there's a plaza across from the church, and we play there.
What was the name of the city you grew up in what country?
Ormoc City, Leyte, in the Philippines. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And was there a teacher or an adult that impacted your life while you were growing up?
Probably, I would say the teacher would be my teacher, my instructor in nursing school. Mrs. Flores, she was strict, but there was something about her though. She cared, but she was very strict, and she was very particular about certain things that you have to do, like how you fold your towels and how you arrange them in your dresser, and then how you make your bed. She's the one who taught us how to make proper bed making.
You have definitely passed that down to me. I really enjoy making beds.
So Mrs. Flores, and then as far as the other adults, it would have to be Che Consolito. Because even after she moved here to Omaha in the United States, she wrote me letters in Spanish. And I loved reading her letters in Spanish.
Was that usual to have a Spanish, things written in Spanish and spoken in Spanish in the Philippines?
Yeah, well, my dad spoke in Spanish to his sisters. Mm-hmm. And we spoke Spanish at home to our parents.
Only Spanish?
Well, it's a mix of Cebuano and Spanish, but our parents insisted that we talk to them in Spanish. And I think it was more like out of respect for them that we did that. Mm. So now if we talked to among ourselves and to other people, we spoke in a dialect. But when we spoke to Mommy and Daddy, we spoke in Spanish.
It was the language of respect, or was it a connection to the ancestors in
it's
your family?
It's a connection. I think it's a connection to when Daddy grew up, they only spoke Spanish to their parents because it was a Spanish, it was still, I guess, from the Spanish, we were under Spain for 300 years. Mm-hmm. And so Lolo and Lola spoke in Spanish. All my uncles and aunts spoke Spanish, very nice, fluent Spanish, and they wrote in Spanish. And so, like, even when my dad would talk to Chaconcelito or to Aloy. They spoke in Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so nice to listen. Such mm-hmm. a beautiful language. And so when Chaconcelito wrote me in Spanish, oh, I loved it. I loved it. She was the only one who wrote me in Spanish. Daddy didn't even write me in Spanish. He wrote me in English. But Chaconcelito always spoke and wrote me in Spanish.
And they were of the Tan family.
Mm-hmm.
Was there something about the Tan family's history where there was a connection to Spain?
Well, I don't think it's just the Tan family in Ormoc. Mm-hmm. All the older families, like even the Larrazabals, the Cordillas, if you look at their, like their Lolos and their Lolas, they all spoke Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
Even if I remember my aunt, Pilang, Chapilang, she was the aunt of my dad.
Mm-hmm.
She dressed up in Spanish attire. Like in the old Filipino Spanish attire. You'll see that in the old picture with the butterfly.
Yeah,
that's her. She dressed up in that, and we spoke to her in Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't think she even knew much of the dialect. Well, maybe she did, but we spoke to her in Spanish.
Was that like a class thing, maybe?
Or it could be.
Hmm.
It could be.
Of the wealthier class?
Could be of that. Yeah, upper middle class.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Because with my classmates, they have, their parents are about daddy's age, but we talk to them in Visayan and the dialect. But I mean, it may have something to do with that.
Yeah, you've always been really good at languages.
Yeah, just Spanish and Cebuano.
Out of that, can you talk about one or maybe two people who've been the biggest influences in your life?
As far as my mom, probably. And I have to say my mom.
In what way?
And maybe in the love for doing things like crocheting, needle pointing, and even some cooking. I think Tita Aloy was the one who really did, showed us more about the cooking. But Mommy was more the things that you do at home. And just her feistiness, and when she has like this vision of things that she wants to do. And she really... it just materialized because she has that vision. Like her vision was to have a business and open rental units in Kogun and in Ormoc, and that happened because she went ahead and got that going. And that vision is right now the gift that keeps on giving to us children because.
Where do you think she got that idea or that vision? What planted that seed for her, do you think?
Probably from her dad. Because her dad was a businessman.
Tell me more about her dad.
I wish I knew more about him. But I really don't know more about him. Other than the fact that he and his friend, Mr. Spandoni, who's a Greek himself, I think they were businessmen from Italy, and maybe they went to the Middle East, and I don't even know what they sold.
Bolo ties? Is that what you're saying? Bolo?
Yeah, bolo. like these.
Oh, for lassos.
No. Bolos were considered like knives, long knives.
Oh, like machetes.
Like that, but they were slim and kind of curved. Some of them were straight and some of them were curved.
So they were knife sellers.
Something like that.
Talking about Leon Aru, her dad?
Leon, mm-hmm. And his best friend was Mr. Spandoni. I just saw the picture and Mommy always said that they were the best of friends. But really did not know much about him other than the fact that he was a businessman and that he traveled to, of course, traveled to the Philippines from Europe and I guess the Middle East, and then into in Butuan through Malaysia, and then maybe Singapore, Malaysia, and then Butuan because of the proximity of those places.
So he was an immigrant to the Philippines.
In a way, I think so. Yeah. Yeah.
Did he? Is and he lived, still alive there, when you were
bought,
born?
He bought pieces of land in Butuan.
Mm-hmm.
He was dead already. Yeah, he was dead. Lola was still alive, but Lola was dead.
Lola
Pilar
was her mom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Lola Pilar, but I never saw him. Lolo Leon never saw him. But Lola Pilar was alive.
I'm always amazed at the story that's connected there, because he had that gold Jewish star with his initials.
Oh.
That signified that he was of Jewish descent,
mm-hmm.
But you grew up Catholic.
Or maybe he was a Jew from Italy. I don't know. Yeah, because I didn't even know that. I really did not know that. I grew up Catholic because mommy's Catholic.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the Filipinos are Catholic. And so probably Lola is Catholic. You know, Lola Pilar is Catholic.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, mommy just became also is Catholic.
So I wonder if he ever was a practicing Jew or just kind of lapse. as like most modern
Who
Jews.
Who knows? Who knows? I don't know. I didn't even know anything about that until you got that from the Philippines, from mommy. Never knew about that. She never said anything about that.
That's kind of wild.
Isn't that wild? Never knew anything about that. And even at that time when we went there with Barry, and we had that first Passover
in the Philippines.
She never really said anything much about that. So,
well, clearly religion is a big part of your life, of your spiritual life.
Mm-hmm.
And how has religion influenced your life and how you see the world?
Yes. I think it has held me through thick and thin. Because unless you have that faith, I don't know what I would have been. Just having faith that God will take care of me. Just coming from the Philippines as young as I was, and my husband was even left behind. Didn't know anybody here. And I think having that part where you just pray, pray. When I'm afraid, I'd pray. And go to church on Sundays. And so whenever I'm afraid or whenever I'm not sure or I'm in doubt of anything, I just pray. And put that faith in there that he'll answer me and he'll guide me in whatever decisions I make. Because I didn't have anybody to ask advice from here when I got here, other than the new friends who are also Filipinos, who are also nurses that came from the Philippines, and we were all in the same apartments together, and they were very nice people.
But it's not like you can just call your mom and ask her what to do, because she hadn't even done that travel, done that journey.
Right. And telephone long distance at that time was very expensive.
What was the year that you were here?
1971 was that. And Daddy and I, whenever we even talked on the phone, it was not a whole lot of talking, because it was more a whole lot of crying. On my part, he wrote letters and we wrote letters, but we really didn't talk. Well, we talked about what was going on. He would talk about what was going on there. I would tell him about what was going on here. But whenever we talked on the phone, it was not a whole lot of.
When you say daddy, you mean my dad, your husband,
yes,
right?
Yes.
How did you guys meet? Tell me a little story about that.
I was in a nursing home. Nursing dorm in Saturn Islands Hospital in Cebu, where I graduated. I was there as a nurse. I actually stayed in the dorm when I started my nursing career from the get-go. As a freshman, you have to live in the dormitory with, I don't know how many, maybe 60 of us, freshmen. And then second year, we became, and we lived in that dormitory.
Early 20s? You were there in your early 20s?
I was there when I was 17 years old.
That's really young.
18, 19. I graduated when I was 20. Like, because my birthday being in May, right?
Yeah.
So, 19?
But you were relatively young.
No, I graduated when I was 19, actually, I think. And then started to work in Saturn Islands Hospital, while I was waiting for my papers from the United States. But I met your dad during my senior year. That's my third year in Saturn Islands Hospital. I was assigned in the outpatient department with other nurses, and your dad was a detail man, medical rep for Mead Johnson Company, and he came and detailed the physicians that were there in the outpatient department. I think he was detailing Sister Jen.
Did he get lost and end up in the nursing unit or whatever?
No, wait a minute. Not Sister Jen. Enfamil. It was Enfamil. The for the babies, Enfamil and then Amopin. I can't remember. I know Sister Jen was one of them. Well, it was like one of those supplemental drinks. But then, and he saw me, and I saw him, and we just said hi, but didn't really think much about it.
You weren't impressed right away.
No, not at all. I thought he was full of himself.
Oh,
okay. My first impression was he was full of himself. I don't know why, but I guess it was just the way he talked or the way he carried himself and all that. Guy's full of himself, but they learned about the our parties, like the G2G parties that we would have in the nursing dorm.
What does that mean, G2G?
G2G means girl to girl.
Girl to girl.
Because we didn't have partners, we're just all girls. And then later on, we'd invite boys, our friends, or some of the reps that we know, and Dad was one of them. And his friend, Benny Borromeo. But anyway, that's where we started, and then we just started going out together as a group. Imelda, my best friend, Imelda, myself, Dolly, Amy. We would go out as a group with Daddy and Benny and all the other people.
But how did you know eventually that he was the one?
Well, I didn't know he was the one. I really didn't know for sure. But we just started dating.
But you were on a track. You're going to get your nursing license and go to America.
Yeah.
So,
and Daddy was so against it.
Your dad.
My dad did not want, me to date Daddy. Your Rami, he did not want me. Because he was afraid that I was going to get married before coming here to the United States.
Because that was his big dream for you.
His big dream was for me to come unattached, find an American, marry an American. That was his big dream. That didn't happen because we did get married. Secretly, we married. We eloped.
So you became a bit of a rebel from the bossy, shy child you described earlier.
Yeah. But that was after I graduated from from nursing, and I was already working in the Southern Islands in the OB department. And we've been dating for maybe 6 months or 7 months. I don't know how long we've been dating. Probably 6 months. And he wanted to marry me before I came to, because by that time I already, you know, we were, oh no, my papers were being processed. Because, you know, the Southern Islands, I mean, this hospital, Roanoke Memorial Hospital, they actually, the one in Roanoke, they were recruiting nurses in the Philippines. And they used this PERT agency in Manila to recruit nurses. And Daddy saw that in the paper. And he actually was the one who got me to be interested. And we applied, and I applied right away for that position.
Wow, so Dad actually helped you.
Not your dad, but my dad.
Your dad.
My
I
dad.
Got you.
Yeah.
Lots of dads, sorry.
Yeah. Not Rami, no. My dad was the one who saw it in the paper. Mm-hmm. And he said, look, this is there's this agency that's they need nurses for America. And he said, Roanoke, Virginia. actually, it was for Virginia. It wasn't really for Roanoke. I think it was more for like St. Petersburg.
Florida?
No, St. Petersburg, Virginia.
I don't even know where that is.
Well, that's actually near, Virginia Beach.
Okay.
Or Norfolk. Okay.
Did you know anything about Virginia at the time? Or why was Lolo, what your dad, so into you going to America? What did that mean for him?
Oh, because during the war, when the Americans came and liberated the Philippines, his friends were, he had American friends. And he loved to talk. And of course, Tito Ben got on an American ship, and he worked as a ship. I don't know what he did in the ships, but when he came home, he would talk about going to North Carolina, South Carolina. I remember him talking about America. And then his friend, Mr. Rodis, had a daughter, two daughters, I think, who came and as nurses in America. And he would be talking to my dad about how they're doing here in America, and how they were, you know, sending them some money home. So Daddy knew the capitals of the United States better than anyone that I know. He memorized all the capitals of the United States. He read up about America. To me, that's why I asked him, why did you not come to the United States yourself when you really are the one who wanted to go to the United States? But he said, you know, at that time, he seemed to just be happy where he was.
But he wanted the dreams for you.
But his dreams, he passed on to his kids, so.
How has your life been different than how you imagined it would be when you were young?
My life now?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I don't know that I could even imagine this life.
Well, did you have any dreams other than living your dad's dream for yourself? Did you personally have any visions for yourself when you were younger, what you wanted to do?
I thought I wanted to be a doctor. I think that was my first thing, was become a doctor. But then when I realized that they said, it will take you 10 years before you're finished. And we said, man, 10 years, that's a long time. And I said, that's a long time to wait to work and earn your living. And I wanted to work and earn my living and get out of the house and get out of Ormoc. I wanted to be like in Cebu or out of, I wasn't really much about being out of the country because I wasn't even out of Ormoc much. Just being out in Cebu was good enough for me. And then maybe one time I was out in Manila for a trip that we did with my classmates I don't even remember why we were in Manila. And that thought, wow, this is such a big city. And then we went to Baguio, which is the summer capital. And so, yeah, at that time, then you start thinking about those things. But I never really, the only thing I knew about America was what you see at the movies.
Which movies are you talking about?
Like movies, I don't know. I can't even
like
say
the this. Classics. You're talking about like Fred Astaire
movies,
and like Ginger Rogers.
Movies with, I remember the movies with Elvis Presley and Anne Margaret and the classics. You know, Ten Commandments. Ten Commandments. That was not even America. That was Egypt.
But hey.
So anyway, my dreams. I don't know that I had big dreams. I was happy as a kid, happy as a teenager. And then when I was in Cebu, I was happy not to be restricted by my dad. Though my dad was very strict, and he did not let us go to many places.
I think that's amazing that your parents, being as strict as they were so for you going halfway across the world to a completely different country.
Exactly. And he didn't even like to fly. He was afraid to fly. But he didn't mind me flying. But it was his dream. It was his dream. But, you know, he was very strict, especially with me and Johnny, because, like, we were the first one, you know. Mm-hmm. He wasn't as strict with Baby and Yung Yung and them, I think, during their time. And even maybe with Loopy. But it was with me and Johnny, he was so strict. But Johnny was the first one, actually, who came to the United States.
Mm-hmm. Your older brother.
Yeah, my older brother. Even though we graduated at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
We graduated high school at the same time. And then right after high school, the nuns in our school approached Dad to say that there is this exchange scholarship for the United States, and that if he wanted Johnny to go, because I think they were asking for a boy, because the daughters had two sons and one little girl, which was Dorothy, and she was a little girl then, so they wanted a boy to live with them, and that's where that's where Johnny got to go. And I went on to college in Cebu, but Johnny went on here to Pennsylvania.
How long was your older brother there for in America?
It was only a year.
Mm-hmm.
He had to go back to high school, to senior high school, even mm-hmm. though he graduated in the Philippines as senior. But see, our senior high school there is not the same as the senior high school here, you know. So mm-hmm. we only had 10 years of schooling, total schooling there, whereas here it's 12 years of total schooling.
That's why you were in nursing school so early,
yes.
So young.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about your experience coming first to the U.S. Like, you mentioned you were crying, there was a big transition time, but were there any people that welcomed you as an immigrant?
Oh, yes. That was really nice. The hospital administrators, like, three of them met us at the airport in O'Hare. No, not in O'Hare, in Midway Airport in Chicago. Mm-hmm. We landed in O'Hare, which is the big airport. Mm-hmm. But then from O'Hare, we were told to take, they told us in instructions, go to this place, take the taxi, and go to Midway Airport. Because in Midway Airport, was our connecting mm-hmm. flight from Midway Airport to Roanoke.
Nice.
No direct flight.
When I talk about, bless you, welcoming, not just physically welcoming you, but did you feel welcomed as an immigrant, as someone different?
Of course, yeah. They needed us. The nurses, there were like 50 of us Filipino nurses in Roanoke. And Roanoke Memorial actively recruited the nurses from the Philippines. So, naturally, I didn't make it in time for the parade, but apparently there was like a big thing in the newspaper about the Filipino nurses coming to Roanoke Memorial and all that. And the people were nice here.
What were your first impressions?
My first impression was being annoyed at what they would say, y'all look alike. Like, they would tell us that we all look alike. like some of the patients would say that, or some of the American nurses would say, "Oh my gosh, y'all look alike. Y'all look alike." And to me, it's like, no, we don't. We don't look alike. But to them, apparently, they all look alike. But then my impression of them too was that they all look alike. Really? So like when my first impression of like the blonde nurses, they all look alike. And my impression of the black nurses, they all look alike. So that's when I realized that must be why they think we all look alike, because I think they all look alike too.
You and know. How about the Southern accent? Was that hard to navigate?
Oh, yes. Well, I thought in the Philippines, we studied English and we used English in school, and our medium of instruction was English. So I thought I knew English. Well, I didn't know English. Like, you know, when you communicate with people, conversation English, it's a little different. And here in the South, oh, it's different. The accent, the Southern accent, is pretty strong. So I was afraid to even take orders on the phone at night, and I was happy to work night shift because even though I was an RN and we were, by reciprocity, we were licensed as nurses to work in here in the United States. And so we can take orders from the doctors, but when the doctors talk to you on the phone, it's hard to understand them. In the beginning, I had a hard time understanding them, and they had a hard time understanding me. So I would normally give the phone to somebody else, like an American nurse. But see, because I'm the RN, I have to be the one to make sure that the orders are followed through. But usually there's another RN at night or an LPN, so they would write it down for me on the doctor's order sheet, and then I would sign off on it once I know.
Tell me that story again when you were talking about the different, you thought they were talking about a doctor, but in fact they were talking about Dr. Pepper.
Oh, well, when we went to the, we had a snack bar downstairs. In a restaurant downstairs in the hospital. And so when my friend and I, we said, okay, it's time for, we went down for our lunch break. And then she said, you want a Dr. Pepper? And I said, who's that? And then she laughed and she said, no, Dr. Pepper, that's a drink, you know, like a soda. And I said, oh. And I said, I don't know, what does that taste? And so she had one, and I tasted her Dr. Pepper, and I said, it doesn't sound good. This doesn't taste good.
You don't want that, doctor.
No.
So wait, so was there ever a time that you didn't feel welcome as an immigrant?
I don't think so. I don't think I ever felt that. I just got frustrated sometimes with the communication part. But like one time I went to Belk's. I mean, at that time it was Leggett's. And I was looking for a tape measure. It's a measuring tape, really. But at the time, I knew in my mind that it was a tape measure. And I asked this lady, sales lady in Leggett's, and said, where can I find a tape measure? And she looked at me like, say that again. You know, tape measure. And she said, I don't understand what you said, what you just said. I said, you know, it's like a ruler, but it's soft. Tape measure. And she said, I'm sorry, I don't know what you're saying. And I don't think we have it. Finally, I just said, okay, that's all right. I was so frustrated with her. I just gave up on her. And I left the store.
Guess that was before they had like fabric stores or something.
Yeah. Well, later on, I talked to my coworker at work, and she said, and I told her what happened, and she said, "Oh, you should have said measuring tape."
Oh, golly!
You should have said measuring tape.
They're pretty close.
I said, that's the same. No, she said, tape measure might be different. We don't normally call that tape measure, but it's a measuring tape.
Now, how long were you a nurse for?
Since 1970.
You retired when?
2014.
That's a long time.
Yeah. Well, I know. I took early retirement when Sydney was born. That was 2005. Mm-hmm. And I was 55 years old then.
So you were a career nurse.
Oh, yeah.
What do you consider your greatest achievement in your professional life?
I think the fact that we were able to get the education, diabetes education, going in the hospitals.
There wasn't one before?
No, there wasn't one. But also because of the help of Dr. Michael Cook, he's an endocrinologist, so he was very big into teaching. And so when he came, he wanted a unit that had a diabetes, all the diabetics can be admitted in there for not only to get their diabetes controlled, but also to teach them while they're there. And we started the diabetes inpatient program in Roanoke Memorial. And then later on, when the insurances would not pay for education, we were able to start outside with an outpatient education program. But it took even Medicare a while to pay for that inpatient education program. But we really got that going. We were there. And when we were recognized by the American Diabetes Association recognition program, you know, as one of the diabetes education programs in Virginia. So that was an achievement for
our
hospital.
That in Virginia there wasn't any form of education for diabetics on how to live what to do?
Oh, no, they had it at UVA. Because we had to go to UVA to their outpatient program, mm-hmm. And observe what they were doing, and we tried to copy that in Roanoke Memorial, which we did for a while. Mm-hmm. So they got recognized. They had an outpatient. Oh yeah, UVA being a research hub, they had all the people there, and they were doing the right thing. And so we went there actually. Myself, the dietitian, and I think it was just two or three of us, and we really went through their program, and then copied that in Roanoke to see how we did. We had some support by administration. We were lucky to get that going, and of course Dr. Cook, and got that going for a while until the insurances would not pay anything, you know, for the education. But anyway, once we got recognized, though, the payment system got a little better. It took a while. But I think just to get the education program for the diabetes people, for diabetes patients going, and then in Roanoke, I thought I was pretty good.
I mean, I know for a fact that you've definitely touched many people's lives in Roanoke, those patients that you had taught. Mm-hmm. Even though your profession was a nurse, I always felt that maybe in your deepest sense you might have been more of a teacher. What do you say to that?
It's funny because I never thought of myself as a teacher, but I think I really did very well as a teacher. And I'm still not comfortable talking in front of people and, you know, as a public speaker or anything like that. I'm not comfortable doing that, and even among Filipinos. But because I'm so confident in my knowledge of diabetes, so like when I taught classes, I was confident. I knew what I was doing. And I think I related to the patients and was able to give them the information that they needed.
Now, as much as you are a teacher on some levels, I, from the outside, as your daughter, always looked at you and admired you for being a lifelong learner. I find that you tend to just if there's something you're interested in, you just go right for it. You will go and study it and you'll go research it. And you really keep yourself young, I think, after all these years, just because you just love to learn. You love life. Life has a lot to offer.
Yes, that's true.
I feel like that's your greatest gift to me. That's your greatest lesson to me. Where does that come from? Did you learn that from somebody?
I don't know. I think it's just a love for life, probably. Plus, the Filipino community is such a great support in Roanoke. We had a very great close Filipino community. And when you communicate with people, you talk to people and learn from them and all that, and you just keep learning and keep talking, and you want, I don't know, I was like a, it seemed like I was never, it was never enough knowledge. It's like you were always looking, it would seem like I was always looking for something else to do or something else. To keep, I guess, my interest was always there for other things. Because, you know, I was involved with selling stuff. Mm-hmm. And then I was involved with Primerica, the insurance thing and all that. I got, like, licensed as insurance agent, learned a lot about insurance at that time, which to me was a revelation, an eye-opener, because I never knew about those things. And then even got into, like, stocks and, you know, and all that. That to me was, I learned a lot there about finances, because I really didn't get into financial stuff in college or anything. My parents really didn't teach me much about finances, and we didn't know about credit cards in the Philippines until we got here, you know, and we got into credit cards over here. And so you learn a lot about that, and then about businesses. People just seem to look at me and come to me and then get me to do something, like sell something. And I get interested in it, and then I try it. You know, I try the Princess House crystals, different things, I think.
We have just about 2 minutes left, if you can believe that. What would be your motto of life? What's something that you'd want to pass on for our generations to come, from mine to your grandkids?
Just keep on. I mean, always be interested in anything and go for it. Just go for it. But also keep the faith. Always keep the faith. Because in all these things, I'm lucky really to have Dad, because he's my biggest supporter, I think. And he's my biggest, he's my best friend. And in every way, we pray together, in any way, in anything, and we discuss things. But our faith, his faith is, I think, even stronger than mine. But we do pray for each other. And so I think in any way, I've always been active with, I think, church activities too, and that has helped a lot. Mm-hmm. So I think just, but being interested, going for that stuff. Just don't let anything. Negative thoughts come sometimes, but not let negative thoughts keep you from doing what you want to do and what you're interested in. And try. Just try. Because if you don't try, how else will you find out that it's apparently good or not? You know? So just keep trying. Don't give up.
Don't give up. Keep trying. Keep the faith.
Keep the faith. Yeah. Always. I always find joy in people. They're not going to be perfect, but there's always going to be people who like you. And you like them. And family. Above all, family. Reach out to family always. Keep the family together. To me, that's always the most important thing. Keep the family together.
Thank you, Mom. I love hearing what you have to say. Mm-hmm. And I hope I make you proud, because I've definitely taken all of your lessons. And I feel that I've definitely embodied them in my life, because you and Dad do a good job doing that too.
Thank you. You're such a good daughter.
You're a good mom.
Yes, I love you.
I love you. Good, I love you. Oh my gosh, that was so long.
Wow, how long was that? 30 minutes? 45 minutes?
Are you sure you're finished recording? Yes.